today's guest was Jess Salamon, a comic I met in New York. She lives in Canada and I live in Austin, but we did a show together and enjoyed each other's comedy. And then I noticed during the Israeli-Palestinian fervor on Instagram lately that she had a lot of strong opinions that I thought were more interesting than some of the other ones that were just completely one-sided and unfair and over the top. And some of her opinions were very strong, though, and definitely had a position. And so I was looking for people who could talk to me about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and their perspective on it. And she was gracious enough to come on and share her perspective. Before starting stand-up comedy, Jess was a war crimes lawyer with the UN at the Tribunal for the Former Yugoslavia in The Hague. She's also been married to a Palestinian woman, Iman El Husseini, for the last 8 years. They've been together for 12 years, and they have a special out on YouTube that they did together called The El Salamons, A Marriage of Convenience. Jess is a Canadian comedian. She's based in New York right now, and she has a monthly show at Union Hall called Sandwich. She's been on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon and also the prestigious Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. It was really cool of her to join me for this and talk about this difficult subject. A lot of times on the Politically Non-Binary podcast, we wind up talking about all sorts of things. We go off on tangents. But on this episode, we stayed really focused on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We recorded this on October 23rd for context, especially in relation to that hospital bombing. At the very end, we decided to do a little fun extra topic. Jess wanted to talk about people who call themselves queer but who only ever date straight. So that'll be in the Substack. To hear that, search for us on Substack, Politically Nonbinary, or go to substack.com/politicallynb. This is the Politically Nonbinary podcast, and I'm your host, Ariel Isaac Norman. Every week, I have on a comedian or some other concerned citizen to confess a controversial opinion or two. Enjoy. All right. Well, Jess, how's it going over there New York?
It's going well. You can't see because it's going to be too distracting for people, but I'll show you quickly. I have my in between as we were doing the tech. My dog came home from a walk and is here in my arms. So she's not like legally a support dog, but I did register her as one. And lately, I've been feeling like she's been providing a lot of emotional support over time.
Sure. So there's a difference between legally being a support dog but you can register one. What's that? I don't know anything about that.
Well, yeah. So, to go on the plane and not pay for your dog, and she's small, and to be able to have her on my lap for a long time, it was just that, a psychologist could write a letter saying for anxiety or whatever, she qualifies as an emotional support animal, but then people took advantage and like brought peacocks and God knows what on the plane. And then after COVID, flights and everything was such a mess, they cracked down in a lot of ways. And they said the dog or pet has to be a service animal. And my dog didn't know about that. Now she couldn't be on my lap. She had to be in her bag. And I'm very much of a rule follower. Like I only even started dating women when Canada legalized gay marriage. I'm gay, but my sexual orientation is respects authority. Very cool person. But I am so obsessed with her and fully have gone down that dog mom road, first dog, that I filled out, a friend of mine sent me some link to this kind of bullshit. Can you swear on this podcast? This BS website where you can register your dog as a support animal. And then I filled out a TSA form where under penalty of law, I could be, penalized. I don't think you can get in jail, thrown in jail, but in any case, if, they find out that you're lying. But I'm so confident in how cute and quiet she is that I've taken that risk. I've broken the law so that I can have her on my lap. And it looks insane because she is 9 pounds. And most service animals have the jacket on and they're leading a blind person through the airport. And her ID card, her just her tongue out. And she's like, hey, just this little, looks like a purse dog. It's hard to sell it, but somehow so far so good, as long as the TSA doesn't watch this podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll keep, we're not big in the TSA demographics, so I should be okay.
Woo!
That I know.
A big confession.
Yeah, that's a big confession already. So you went to a website to register her as a service dog, is what you're saying. Not an emotional support one, but there's actual service dog registry. That's interesting. Yes. So
and she has so she's registered. They sent it an ID card. Right. Yeah.
How much did that cost?
You know what? I don't know. My wife did it. And then she didn't tell me what she wrote down that our dog was trained to do, which is like the one thing that they can ask you about under like privacy legislation. And she's like, oh no, I don't know. I don't know what we put her down. And then I asked someone else that I know did this with their dog, but in not a legit way. And I used what they use, which is to say like tactile therapy, which is basically just, I guess, also for anxiety, like petting, and then the like weight, like, I forget, I need to look at what the terms are, but like it basically sounds like one of those boyfriend pillows or weighted blanket, but.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Weighted, like animal.
Pressure therapy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you're on the spectrum or something and you need the dog to be weight. Yeah. So your dog is registered as a service dog the way I'm registered as a reverend, where I went on some website for 2 minutes and paid $1 to be, I can officially marry people.
That's cool.
It's easy to do. It takes 2 minutes. That's interesting because, people always, the idea of emotional support animals is just so funny to me because it's like, that's what dogs are. Like, unless you have a hunting dog or a dog that's like a guard dog, that's what we bred them to be. They're all emotional support animals. So like the idea that some are registered as it or not, like that's what a little fuzzy dog is. Mm-hmm.
I read somewhere that they're basically a heart with fur, and I think that's so true.
So we should all be able to have our dogs if they're small. I just think it should just be a small dog. If you have a small dog who's well behaved, then you can have the dog on your lap. But I mean, and who in this country isn't mentally ill at this point? So we all need help. All right, Jess. Well, what's your controversial opinion that you've brought for us today?
Well, I mean, we started talking online about the Middle East, about Israel, Palestine. I'm assuming we're going to talk about that topic. On this topic, I will say that if you're someone who has railed against cancel culture and how sensitive people are and that you can't say anything, but you're too scared to speak up against a genocide unfolding in Gaza, then I think you cannot do that any longer.
Right. So if you're upset about cancel culture, you should be upset about people's lives actually literally being canceled.
You shouldn't be afraid to, speak up and give your opinion because you don't want to deal with backlash and I don't know because I haven't seen what he said, but I have seen a few posts that people have been walking out of Dave Chappelle's shows because he's been talking about Israel. And I'm assuming that he's been speaking up for Palestinian people. There's someone who isn't afraid to say what he thinks. And so there is some consistency there. But there are a lot of other sort of edgelords who I don't really see saying anything that might hurt their career suddenly.
It seems like, it seems like people are afraid to speak about this at all. Like a lot of people are afraid to speak about this at all. On any level, whether talking about Israel, Palestine, But then there's other people who are extremely vocal and opinionated on either side of it as well. So none of this really falls neatly right now into the kind of culture war that because it's definitely not like a liberal or conservative thing at this point. If anything, it's almost like people who are more woke seem to be more on the I stand with Palestine end of things, and people who are more anti-woke or woke critical seem to be more on the I stand more with Israel. I mean, but these things are that's such a, you know, binary way of putting this anyway. And then I'm hearing, you know, maybe Chappelle, who's pretty anti-woke, you know, might also be in the pro-Palestine camp. And again, I hate even saying pro-Palestine because it's just like there's no way to frame any of this, I think, in kind of simplistic terms, at least to my mind. Do you have any like short kind of position?
People will tell me, like, they'll be like, oh, you're anti-Israel or you're pro-Palestine. And, you know, honestly, I'm just pro-justice. And I think that I don't know if Chappelle's not woke. I think he wouldn't be considered woke as we know that term to mean when it comes to queer, you know, concerns and issues and human rights as concerns, like especially trans people. But you know, otherwise, I think he's been very much outspoken on certainly on race, you know. So I understand people who for whom this is like something that they haven't been following and they're kind of just sort of learning about it and forming their opinions and trying to get information and don't feel and there or people who just aren't sort of outspoken in general. But it's the combination for me of the like, you can't say anything anymore. And, you know, but also like, you know, I'm like this fearless sort of last bastion, modern philosopher, last bastion of free speech comedian. And, but also totally not wanting to say anything about this because of the particular ramifications that this topic can hold when it comes to professional life, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I guess if we found a topic that's even more third rail than trans stuff, it's America's, you know, finally invested in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in a real way for the first time in at least, you know, 30 years. And so now, you know, a whole new generation of people are considering whether or not to say anything about this and trying to figure it out. I mean, I don't know about you, but like every time I open my Instagram up, I'm confronted with dead babies on both sides, you know, and various things like that and propaganda from both sides. And I hate even saying both sides about anything because there's a number of different sides, you know, a number of different things going on. There are the citizens in Palestine and Gaza, everywhere else, and there's the citizens in who are Israelis, but then there's also the leadership of Israel, the leadership of Palestine through Hamas, and there's all the other countries who are invested in this. So again, it's like all of this defies. I really want to try to stay away from simplistic language and binary kind of labeling about sides. But do you have like just an elevator pitch for what you think should be the outcome of how things are handled over there, and then how to get there?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the U.S. investment or involvement, that's been long, long standing since the creation of the State of Israel. And, you know, billions of dollars are sent to Israel from the U.S., from taxpayers here for many years now. It's, you know, Israel's main funder and ally. So that's always been the case. But what hasn't always been the case is, you know, social media. And I can tell you, you know, sort of where what I think needs to happen there in like the immediate sense and like more longer term. But I will say, as someone who's been sort of following this for a long time, and by no means I'm an expert, but I've been on a journey of like growing up Jewish, still am Jewish, with like a certain narrative, which is the Zionist narrative that we all grow up with in the diaspora outside of Israel, even if you're not that religious and didn't go to Jewish school like me. You know, I grew up with like a certain, certain talking points, a certain narrative. And then over the years, I went into international law and I sort of like my mind started opening up a little bit about looking at the conflict through the lens of like war crimes, for example. And then I ended up going into comedy, meeting a Palestinian woman. And that then was like further open my mind to certain things that I had previously just absolutely not been aware of. And so when I interact with, you know, a lot of Jewish people online or in my community, my family, you know, they talk about this other side and like there's this other perspective and you're not considering this, that, and the other. And I'm looking at them or reading, you know, what they're saying. And I'm like, I know everything you're saying. Like, these are the same things that I used to say years ago. Like, but, you know, in that time, like it's been a journey for sure. But certainly the internet has helped. And I noticed a big shift in May 2021 was the last bombardment of Gaza, nothing compared to now, but still significant. And at that, in May of 2021, I noticed like sort of a shift in terms of people, like, you know, getting text messages that I had sent to Black friends the year before in the summer of 2020, which was, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like the George Floyd Black Lives Matter movement, you know, protests, where a lot of white people sort of, we all had this reckoning of like, oh wow, there's so much that we did not know. And these, you know, well-meaning white people, anti-racist book clubs started, you know, popping up and people trying to like do the work and whatever, for what, you know, obviously we can, there's a lot to be said about where that led and what difference it made. But then when the following May, Gaza was being bombarded, I did like messages I'd sent to Black friends where it was like, oh, I'm just checking in, wanted to see, you know, see how you were. I don't really know what to say here, but maybe, you know, if there's any resources you might be able to like point me to. I don't want to like create any more labor for you. You know, like it was like I was getting those from those friends and also now. But I did see a lot of people who are not Arab or Muslim or Jewish who were sort of tuning in and felt like a responsibility to not just be like checked out and say, oh, it's just complicated. And I'm not, you know, that they felt like, okay, maybe I need to sort of understand what's happening, realize that maybe this is an asymmetrical situation. There's like an oppressed people here. And it's, these aren't really equivalent positions and that there's a long history of this. And so I think it started then, but now certainly even more so. And so, you know, all of that is like really positive. And I've been having a lot of really good conversations with, people that are like new to this and want to learn, definitely with some Jewish people that like come in pretty hot into my inbox and then we sort of walk through it. And I know I can feel the resistance to learning certain things, you know, because like I was there too. I was there on Facebook years ago with this Persian guy who came in and was like, well, Israel helped create Hamas. And I'm like, you're insane. What are you talking about? And then I Googled it and I was like, oh, right. Okay. Yeah, that did happen. And then, you know, like sort of like the sort of starting of like, there's like maybe I'm talking about this so righteously without really having much of an idea of anything beyond what I grew up with and that I've just sort of been repeating. And I hadn't really done so much of my own reading about it because I kind of just grew up with the story, like almost like a language that you learn, you don't really think about. And that was only reinforced for a very long time by the 6 and 11 p.m. news. And now like there are so many, you know, people can recommend lists of accounts to follow and journalists and possibly artists. And, you know, I guess I would say one of the things I think is really important is that, and maybe this is another controversial opinion, but I think if you don't know Palestinian people, if you don't have a Palestinian friend or you don't read Palestinian voices, I just don't think you know what you're talking about, because there's just no way to look at anything that's ever happened in this world to an oppressed group and not hear from them. Like it's really like a white person in this country, which would almost be hard to imagine at this point, saying that they understand racism in this country and African-American history and never having spoken to a Black person or, you know, read any Black perspective. Not to be like, you know, to take this idea from Ziwe, who I don't know if you know Ziwe, comedian who started doing this IG live show during COVID. And then it was, I believe, on Showtime, where she had white people come on and put them on in the hot seat and like grilled them about civil rights leaders and like how many Black friends they had. And everybody would kind of be like, I think the safe number was like 3 or 4, because it seemed like you weren't like exaggerating, but also you didn't just have like one Black friend. And I feel like I can promise you, if I sat down with many of these Jewish people, if not all of them, and asked them if they knew any Palestinians, like they would not. They really wouldn't. I mean, maybe they, you know, they try to be like, well, like buy falafel from this one guy. And like that doesn't count, you know. But yes, I can. I mean, in terms of like the situation and what I think, you know, has to happen, we can get into that if you want.
Well, also, let's just punctuate that with, so for one thing, it would be nice if anybody who, while you want people to be outspoken about this, we also would like people to only be outspoken once they have tried to really get into this topic a little more thoroughly than whatever propaganda has been handed them. So you should probably have both Palestinian friends and Israeli friends. You should probably have read some books by authors, you know, looking at the various sides, because to anything that's complicated and, you know, that people have strong differing opinions on, there are going to be multiple truths from multiple perspectives. And if you have only, you know, even kind of looked at one side of that, like, of course you should look at the other side. Again, I hate to just say the other side, but, you know, to some extent there are two sides to this. And so, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And it's very strange to me when people do chime in who don't seem to have tried that at all. So I think that most people, if they thought about it for a minute, could agree to that simple point, like try to broaden your horizons to talking to different people, reading different authors and historical scholars. What would you like to see happen in the Israel-Palestine territory?
Right. Let me just say too, with respect to the posting, the kind of posts that I really object to is that people, like there were a lot of Jewish people who were been really aggressively posting, like if you haven't spoken up about the deaths in Israel, you know, the Hamas's atrocities, really, you're with the terrorists, you're anti-Semitic, when those people don't really post about anything else. And I don't think there's, like, just because people don't post about something is not, like, I'm with you, like, it doesn't mean that. You can't, don't be drawing these like terrible conclusions about who they are. And then these people that were so vocal about, like, if you don't post about this, like, then you never, they haven't said anything really about what's unfolding in Gaza, which, you know, yeah. I don't believe is a controversial point, which is a genocide. I mean, I say this as someone who worked in that area and studied that. But I think in terms of what to do, I think immediately. Yeah, go ahead.
Hold on. Yeah. So now I want to, follow up with, because I also saw posts from, so I follow, cause I try to follow all kinds of things, and I follow a few accounts that are very, very pro-Palestine. And you know, some of them were also saying, if you don't post, in support of Palestine, then you are racist and basically one of the bad guys in all these ways. And so, you know, I'm seeing that from kind of both sides of this, that
I'm not on board with that. Yeah.
Right. It's like, come on, guys, like, let's be reasonable. Most people are too ignorant of this to be making you don't want everyone posting about this. But
you don't want Justin Bieber posting a picture of the rubble in Gaza. Thinking it's
right.
Real.
We don't need that. Right. But, you know, what I have seen criticized is some of the elite institutions, you know, the universities who normally do come out with positions about things, being kind of, you know, strangely quiet, kind of purposely saying, you know, like, hey, we're not touching this, right after the October 7th thing. Whereas to me, like, what could have been better is them coming out and saying, obviously that's horrific, but there's horrific things going on to the Palestinians as well. And we would really like to support all the civilians on both sides, and you know, they're we would like them to be living in peace and harmony, and we would like to encourage the world leaders to pursue policies that actually lead toward that. Like, instead of kind of, you know, because I do see it being somewhat creepy to not be upset about at least what I take to have been some pretty gruesome and disgusting acts from Hamas on October 7th. Some people are saying, you know, it's completely justified and the blood is all on Israel's hands. And even to me, even if you think that on some level that's true, it also doesn't mean that the blood is on the Israeli citizens' hands necessarily, right, any more than the blood of what Hamas did is on the Palestinian citizens' hands. And so I think, to me, it's just like there's just a clear distinction where I would assume that most Palestinians and most Israelis would prefer to live in peace and harmony some way or another, whether that, whatever the how many state solutions that could be. And then it seems that there's leadership on either side who would prefer for the entire area to be Palestinian free or Israeli free. And so you've got people who are, you know, caught up in that. And so, you know, it's kind of like blaming Americans. Like, most Americans would prefer not to have a Biden Trump rematch. So if you, you know, so if, right.
What a disaster.
So if you blame us, right, whereas like it's our leadership that is the big problem. The people here, generally speaking, are good people who would like to live in peace and harmony. You know, but there's and then there's always citizens who are violent and who are, you know, racist and whatnot. I'm sure there's not all Palestinians or Israelis are perfect, but most people are probably generally pretty good. But the governments of all of us, like, seem to be failing us. And I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, is that not like the simplest starting place for this?
Yeah, I do think you have to definitely separate the civilian population from its government. I don't think it's fair to hold them accountable, certainly not in any kind of way that justifies violence. You know, people can have their stereotypes about countries, you know, based on the kind of governments that they have, perhaps, but never in a way that justifies civilian deaths. I do think in particular Netanyahu has to go. Like, I think there needs to be a ceasefire immediately, and Netanyahu absolutely has to go. I mean, there's, I believe, you know, most of the Israeli public that's not extremists hold him very much accountable for what happened. Certainly Hamas is accountable for their own actions, but this kind of an intelligence failure is unimaginable in Israel. It has been not the case. And it's an indication of the fact that this guy is completely distracted and has taken, aligned himself and formed a government with these very extreme religious right-wing essentially terrorists that he has in his cabinet. And the reason that he did it was because, like Trump, he's under, you know, he's on trial for his own crimes, and the only way to remain free, a free man, is to be prime minister. And so it's so particularly gross because so many people in a way have died because he is trying to save himself. And I can't think of a worse person actually really right now, because there is no reason for Israel to have had this kind of a security breach, given the security apparatus and military apparatus that it has, and the way that the total control and surveillance that it has over Gaza. So, and part of the reason is because the people in his cabinet, these, you know, religious right-wing wig nuts, they're like, their whole thing is, you know, ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. They've been very openly talking about annexing the West Bank and use genocidal language constantly. They've been very preoccupied with expanding settlements in the West Bank. Israel always has, every single government, but in a way that's been faster and more aggressive and more violent than ever. And so they fund these settlers to take over people's houses, to terrorize Palestinian families in the West Bank, where, by the way, there is no Hamas. There's just the Palestinian Authority, which is works hand in hand with Israel, has been absolutely cooperative and peaceful. And I mean, in a way, it's like, it's a little bit like, well, what has that gotten the Palestinians? You know, they've just been terrorized by settlers who are there with the IDF behind them, supporting them. No one's ever held accountable for any of the pogroms, the crimes that, like, the list of terror that is committed every day in the West Bank by these people is truly abhorrent, and not different from Hamas. But that's where the IDF has been. That's why they weren't in Gaza. That's why it took them so long to be there to rescue, to intervene in the massacre that Hamas was perpetrating. Okay. So in many, many, many ways. And also Netanyahu's policy has been to fund Hamas for the last couple of years.
Tell me more about that. I mean, that's an open thing, that's just his policy. Like, how did that start?
Well, you know, Israel Hamas has always been useful to Israel. From the very beginning, when Israel was involved in the creation of Hamas, because the alternative to Hamas was the Palestinian Liberation Organization with Yasser Arafat. And, you know, there was a peace process happening. The PLO was like kind of, you know, legitimate potential partner in peace, government, you know, for a Palestinian state. And Israel wanted a counterweight, wanted an opposition. It was a divide and conquer strategy. And so it was strategically in their interest to build up Hamas. And so they did in the 80s. And but more recently, Hamas, Netanyahu was on record. I don't know if it was like, let's say something that was leaked, but he was quoted as saying to his Likud party that it's necessary to support Hamas materially, fund them in order to thwart a two-state solution. Because fundamentally, Israel, at least in a very long time, has not been interested in a two-state solution. They have, they want to have a situation, because they have a partner for peace in the Palestinian Authority, and all they've done is humiliate them and show that, like, actually there's the Palestinians cannot gain anything and can only lose in this way. And so that, of course, emboldens Hamas. And every time Hamas throws rockets, launches rockets, it creates a pretext for Israel to crack down further on Palestinians. It gives them a little bit more of a green light, and in this case, full support from the U.S. and the EU,
right,
to that was do whatever.
Yeah. I'd never, you know, I didn't know anything about Netanyahu funding Hamas before this, but I remember, you know, as this was unfolding on October 6th.
The money was being funded through Qatar.
Okay. So somewhat obliquely. I remember on October 7th thinking, well, you know, this seems like Netanyahu's wet dream, because now he's got the excuse to go and sort of finish the job giving them the moral high ground in a way, to go ahead and try to take the whole thing. It seems like Netanyahu is the biggest part of the problem. But at one point, Arafat had some options for peace that he didn't want. Or can you tell me something about that?
I remember at Camp David, it appeared like there was a possibility for peace. And I remember Arafat walking away. But this is like truly my memory of it from a long time ago, and like of all of the different things that I remember being told, it's one that I have not gone back and like reread about. So I don't really remember the circumstances around that. I don't really know. I know that the Oslo, I feel like the Oslo peace, I don't, that, yeah, I feel like there was the Oslo peace process in Camp David. There have been opportunities for peace that have been lost. I think that in the last decades, it's Israel that's been very determined to thwart any attempt at a peace process, a two-state solution. The U.S. has not even attempted to revive it in years. At least 10, it's not been spoken about. I'd have to go back and look and see what exactly happened and what the circumstances were around that. I do know that at no point has Israel stopped illegally taking land from Palestinians. The settlements have never, I don't believe they've even paused to sit down at the table.
Right.
Which is crazy.
I didn't Yeah, my historical understanding of this is not great, but I do just remember being a kid in the 90s watching the attempts at peace talks on TV and just thinking, you know, these men are yelling over each other and don't seem to really want peace. And the whole thing was always a back and forth of, well, but you guys did this to us. Yeah, but before that, you guys did this to us. And before that, you guys did this to us. And so it seemed like, okay, well, at some point, do we want to continue down a revenge cycle? Or can we try to find a way out of this? And so I think it sounds like what it's maybe you're saying when Arafat was in power and with the PLO, then Netanyahu starts funding Hamas to be a counter.
Well, no, I mean, the Israel's creation of Hamas happened before this peace process situation, like the Camp David scenario. Yeah. I that was before, but there was also a long history before Hamas even showed up on the scene. You know, because the occupation started in 67. And I think, you know, from my understanding, Hamas started in 73 and it was a charitable organization for a while before it became this, you know.
Was Israel funding that? At what point did Israel start funding?
The funding, like that quote of what Netanyahu said was in 2019. I just mean Netanyahu in the last couple of years has been approving money through Qatar for Hamas. And because I know that on the American domestic front, politically here, there were a lot of Republicans who were blaming Joe Biden for Hamas's attack, saying that it was because some sanctions had been lifted on Iran, and that's where the money came from, because it is was a very sophisticated attack. Iran has always backed Hamas, and I'm sure was involved to a certain extent in the training, and you know, has always been a backer, you know, of Hamas. So, but it wasn't the lifting of the sanctions by Joe Biden that changed that. That money, in fact, has not been released to Iran, even though the sanctions have been lifted. It's still like in the bank account.
There's some
tight restrictions on it. Yeah.
The sanctions would free up $6 billion for Iran, and it was about $6 billion worth of military stuff, like that people are making that connection.
Okay. Well, I mean, it makes sense. Like these things like play out politically here in a way that's convenient for like the fighting between Democrats and Republicans. But that money, number one, was always Iran's. It was just being held from them. But it was, the sanctions were lifted, but that money has not been given to Iran.
But I mean, it's depending on how their budget
wasn't
works.
Money. Right. But if you say that Joe Biden's lifting of the sanction was absolutely not the cause of extra money flowing to Hamas. It's not to say that Hamas doesn't back to Iran. It's not to say that Iran doesn't back Hamas. They always have. But for whatever responsibility Joe Biden bears, it's not. There's nothing related to the sanctions that was at play.
Okay. Again, depending on how their budgeting works, I could see Iran going, oh, good, we're going to have this money we weren't sure we would have. So now we can spend this money on these terrorists.
Like when you get a new job and you're like, you just go out and buy a bunch of
stuff. Right, yeah, exactly.
But also, we do know that money was coming from Israel through Qatar because it's on record. Yeah.
So that
also,
what you're basically
funded by Iran. Yeah.
Yeah. Generally. And so, but on some level, it really maybe was sort of an inside job from Netanyahu to, if he's funding Hamas, knowing that, I mean, maybe he didn't imagine quite all of the rape and murder,
it was, I don't know that was imagined. But also there's something to be said for being in the kind of political situation that he's in, sort of fighting for his life, in a way, and not being in jail and being a wartime president, we know rallies people around you and makes it more difficult.
Yeah. What's the election situation for Netanyahu? Is he getting reelected every few years, or how does that work?
I mean, I don't know so much about Israeli domestic politics. There are so many parties. It's like so classically Jewish in that there's like, it's not a big country and there's like the most number of opinions and parties. And so it tends to be like some mix of a coalition government that can be, in this case, the only way for Netanyahu to get enough numbers to be a majority or to have control of parliament, he needed to bring into his coalition these horrible actors of Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and
okay.
But so they do have elections quite often. Yeah.
Okay. Whereas in America, we have too few parties. In Israel, they have what you might call too many parties.
Yeah, I would kind of say like, and I don't want to be like a Goldilocks about this, but in Canada we have three major parties, and it works out better.
Three parties and three genders. That's I'm kidding. Okay, so yeah, I mean, this is, and maybe I'm hopelessly, optimistic, and whatnot, but I've heard a lot of people say, after this, disgusting October 7th attack, that, well, obviously Israel has to retaliate if you get hit. This, them losing 1,400 people is the equivalent of the U.S. losing 48,000 people. And so if that happened to us, obviously we would, put a boot up their ass as we did in after 9/11. And, obviously that was everything that we did post 9/11 was pretty wrongheaded and led to horrible outcomes for everyone. So I don't think that's a great way of thinking, but also from my perspective, like I would like to imagine a different reality in which, someone besides Netanyahu was in power, and like Israel has the upper hand in just about every way, yes. Israel has so much more power and resource and whatnot. And so it has to come from that side to have peace. Like that's, yes. The Palestinians have no bargaining power. Right. And so it has to come from that side. And so to my mind, this amazing thing could have happened where after the most depraved and horrible thing, when people's sympathies are in many, most people's sympathies were leaning toward Israel. If the leadership in Israel had said, you know what? There has been so much death and horrible, depraved acts to everyone in this whole region. We actually don't want to retaliate. What we would like to do is finally come together and say, let's work out peace. Because obviously, I really think that could have worked. I think for once in the region, that could have been a most amazing, beautiful moment. I mean, it's kind of like some biblical stuff. This also happens in the Book of Mormon. I was raised Mormon, where it's like you lay down your weapons of war and you say, you know what? We're going to end the cycle of violence. And we're going to say, we are a peace-loving people. We've been claiming as Israel that we are the peace-loving people and those are the barbarians. Well, let's fucking prove it and actually do something that many people would consider insane in the name of peace. And instead of retaliating, say, you know what, Palestinians, we don't believe that Hamas represents you. They were elected, 17 years ago by less than 50% of the people who are of voting age, even so now. So we would like to come to the table now and say, let's figure out a solution where we can all live together. And I don't know if that's a two-state solution or if there really needs to be, I kind of have this pet, I'm so ignorant about all this, but I have this kind of pet idea about a one-state, two-state solution where you have the Palestinians and the Israelis having their own state, like we do in the United States. And then you have some kind of federal national government where they have to work together so that they can, figure out borders and join defense. I don't know. What do you think about that? Would that have been possible?
Yeah. Well, no, because it absolutely goes against like everything that Israel is, because at the heart of the Zionist idea is a Jewish state. And what that means is that there needs to be, Palestinians by their very nature are an existential threat to a Jewish state. And so when the population rises to a certain percentage, that is considered a threat. So when the whole idea of a Jewish state is predicated upon another population not growing, which is why they're not allowed to build homes, why they're evicted, why, it's why there's ethnic cleansing and why this is different from other situations. It's that Palestinian lives are by their very nature an existential threat to the idea of a Jewish state, which demands a Jewish minority, a Jewish supremacy. That's why we are able to be, there needs to be a Jewish majority, there needs Jewish supremacy. That's why that's why this is going on fundamentally, but the idea of a two-state solution would say, well, the Palestinians can have a state, there can be a Jewish state where with no Palestinians, very little Palestinians, or a state just for Jews. Like, I mean, I'm not in love with that idea personally, but it's better than like what we have now. But a long time ago, I used to believe a lot in a two-state solution because it sounded really good. But I've come around to this idea that, I don't think that anybody that really, has been following this situation, this conflict for a very long time, or is like quite, tuned in. I don't think anyone serious even talks about a two-state solution anymore, to be honest. Like, mm-hmm. I think that because Israel has created a situation on the ground that makes that impossible. So it's not only that they haven't been willing to come to the table for decades, it's that what they've been doing on the ground makes the idea of a state for Palestinians impossible, because beyond just the like supporting Hamas to the detriment of the Palestinian Authority, there are hundreds and hundreds of checkpoints. There's a wall that was built, a security wall that separates Gaza's in its own prison. There's a wall that cuts off the West Bank. There's checkpoints everywhere. All of this prevents movement of Palestinian people physically, also to be able to even think about and organize a unified government or state. And that's by design. And so the Palestinians have been more and more ghettoized, more and more marginalized. And they live, if you look into what daily life is like under this occupation, they have no control over anything. And that makes it very difficult for them to imagine a two-state solution, because not even just putting aside the Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, like what that government would look like for a Palestinian state, there's no contiguous piece of land on which without going back to the 67 borders, removing these settlements, taking down a wall. You know, like there was maybe if that was something, but I just cannot imagine that's something that Israel would do because they've been doing the opposite. At some point, like the two-state solution, just they would talk about it here and there, but you know, it started to become clear to me, I mean, reading people talking about this, that it was just sort of like this lip service that was paid to this idea to appease liberal Zionists in America who send tons of money over there while they do what they really want to do, which is what the Zionist project has been from the beginning. The Zionist leaders that founded Israel were very clear about this because they talked openly about ethnically cleansing Palestinians, because if they didn't, they would end up in an apartheid state situation, which is what's happened. So it's so crazy when you say Israel's an apartheid state, and putting aside all the evidence of it, all the documentation of it, that there's two separate legal systems, what the human rights organizations' reports have clearly outlined, putting that aside, you know, people are like, how could you say that? That's anti-Semitic. It's like, well, the founders of this country said it. And so I think that the only options are a one-state solution, some kind of variation of what you're talking about with power sharing, democracy, you know, protection for minority rights, or it's a full ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And obviously I'm not on board with that. So I've come around to like a one-state solution, but that's, I also had to come around to the idea that I'm not a Zionist actually. And that I can be Jewish and not be a Zionist, because that's something that you don't even realize, you know, because it's so interwoven purposefully, you know, growing up Jewish, it's Israel is part and parcel of that. And so you're made to feel like if you're not a Zionist, if you don't support this idea of a Jewish state, that you're a bad Jew, you're self-hating, you know, whatever, you know, that you're a traitor, et cetera. And that Zionism is a political movement that began at the end of the 1800s, and Judaism is a religion that's existed for 3,000 years. So like, you know, I've just started to reject that. And there's a lot of Jewish people. I mean, well, New York, there's a lot of Jewish people. So you have a little bit more variety, and there is a viewpoints and politics. And there are a lot of, especially younger Jewish people who are, you know, we were really sold this idea and really like grew up with like, you know, Holocaust education and so, you know, really ingrained in us the, like what a threat anti-Semitism is, which it is, and a history of persecution, and that the answer to that is Israel, and that is a safe haven, and that's the way that we're going to be safe. And I just don't think that you can have safety that's built on the oppression of another people. You can't have safety that's built on an occupation. What you end up having is what the Zionist leadership said would happen, which is an apartheid state. And so, you know, where Palestinians are absolutely right to resist, you know, not to murder civilians and take hostages, little kids and elderly and, you know, whatever. Absolutely, that is not justified. But is Hamas justified in breaking through the wall and killing soldiers and taking over military installations? Yes. And that was also part of October 7th, you know?
Right.
And this idea of like self-defense for Israel, well, if there's self-defense for Israel, there's also self-defense for Palestinians. And what was going on before October 7th? 250 Palestinians were killed in this year alone before October 7th. And then, and then Israel went and, you know, was, they provoke with these incursions at Al-Aqsa Mosque. And part of it is called, you know, it's like this fanning the flames to mow the lawn. It's to provoke Hamas to then have the, you know, so I just I don't see it as a safe haven. And I am very much inspired by like a lot of the Jewish community here, the groups that speak out against occupation, who are reclaiming, you know, Jewish identity from this idea that it should be dependent on or in relation to Israel.
So because with Zionism, Is the idea of Zionism is that the Jews need the state of Israel to be, that's their homeland, and they should be living there in a Jewish state, right?
Yeah, it's that, well, the thing, the lie of Zionism was that Israel, the state of Israel, was that this was a land without people for a people without land. And the lie is that there were people there. But when we're taught about Israel, they don't mention Palestinians. There's no mention of, and of course, I now know a lot more because I am with a Palestinian person. And so I have a sense of like just how rich, how educated, how cultured, how much life and history and existed, you know. And I, you know, in the Zionist education, in the little bit that I had, like I remember the dehumanization of Palestinians, if they were mentioned coming up, you know, when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. And all of that was just reinforced at the time. All we had was a 6 and 11 p.m. news. Palestinians were terrorists. If anything, they were just like, they existed only as a hurdle and something scary in the way of us finally having a safe haven. And shouldn't we have that? We suffer the Holocaust and many other persecutions before that. And anti-Semitism is still rife in the world. Never mind that the Palestinians had nothing to do with the Holocaust.
Right.
And, you know, so I, you know, I've started like for a while now to, and frankly, I just don't think that I had to, like, the intellectual knots I had to tie myself in to defend this place. At a certain point, you're like, what am I doing? You know, I believe in democracy. And I don't think a Jewish state, Islamic state, or Christian state is even can be democratic as a starting point.
Right. So is Zionism is inherent to that, that it has to be a Jewish state, as in
right. So that it's the, not that Jews, a secular the issue is not Jews living there. The issue is Jews living there to the exclusion of Palestinian people, of other people, such that okay, they so are that is a majority. Yeah.
Oh, they, okay. So that's the idea of Zionism entails that they have to be a majority of the population.
Right. Because that's what makes it a Jewish state. That I think that if Jews are not in a large majority and in control, that you know, it might not be a Jewish state anymore.
Right. I guess and I'm so just wondering if you could. If you could be a Zionist on some level, but a Zionist who believes, like, as long as Jews have a home in Israel that is safe for them, that's not, for instance, an Islamic state, but is a democratically run state, like, could you still be a Zionist and not feel like you have to necessarily be the majority and, like, in power, much less get rid of everyone else?
I don't think so. Yeah. I think if that's incompatible with Zionism. And, you know, there are different versions of Zionism. There's like religious Zionism and political Zionism. But for me, fundamentally, Zionism is what it does. And I think we've seen pretty clearly where it goes, you know, what it does. And it is, it's an ideology, a political movement that sees any group, but in particular, because that's who was there, Palestinians, their very existence as an existential threat. And that and a lot of the history of Israel and of this whole story that we were told and of the PR and all of you, like there's so much money that goes into something called Hasbara, which is Israeli propaganda. There is there are so many organizations online. There's the Anti-Defamation League that work to push this narrative on campuses. They have IDF soldiers on campuses to push this. Like, have you seen a country so desperate to like convince people? Like, why do they have, they're harassing like the Twitter account of Israeli states, like going after Bella Hadid, you know? What do you, like at a certain point, it's just like, there's something wrong here. Like the desperation of trying to, you know, sell this idea as like democratic, as just, is falling apart. And as it does, you see how crazy people are getting, you know, around it. And you when you start to ask questions and you start to challenge people with information, they absolutely break down, and all they can say is you're anti-Semitic. Like at the end of the day, you know, because in the US, we can criticize the US all day long. We literally can criticize any country. You can take issue with any country and nothing will happen to you. Literally nothing will happen to you. Whereas here, like, you see people are losing their jobs. Like a lot of people are losing their jobs for no reason, for saying that they're against genocide.
Yeah. Interesting. So, so you're saying basically the idea of Zionism, and certainly what Netanyahu wants, is to have a completely Israeli state with no Palestinians. And then on the other hand, you have Hamas, who's also said, and, you know, there seems to be, you know, at least some strong movement of people who would like to get rid of all of the Jews. And so now, well, you kind of...
Yeah, I don't think it's get rid of all of the Jews. It's they want to get rid of the Zionist state. They want the whole thing to be Palestine. And well, let's say, because I know a lot of people will say, and look, I'm not defending Hamas. Probably if they could kill me, they would, even if I was here. But like, they're not... their goal is not to kill Jews around the world. Their goal is them, a violent terrorist organization, is to have, is they want to have a Palestinian state on the whole land. And they want to wipe out Zionism and Zionists. And that's
right.
You know,
well, I've heard clear some in their charter. Killing all of the Jews and Christians, and that in the end times, like, the idea is that all the Jews will be killed because the trees will call out, like there's some kind of...
I don't know. I mean, I've read their charter from 2017, and I did not see that. I think it may be in their charter from 1988.
That's what I heard. It was in the charter from 1988, but then they realized like they couldn't really say that anymore. But then I saw some recent videos where people were still echoing that. And so I don't think that's necessarily what most Palestinians want, but it's just kind of...
There's an entire other leadership in the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority. So it's not even like that Hamas is in charge of... It's not just that they don't represent Gazans. They literally do not represent most Palestinians. And so like even politically. So, but you know, I get told this a lot, and this was one of the things with my wife that like was one of those moments where you're like, oh fuck, you know, where, you know, I kept saying this to her about Hamas, and because Israelis or Zionists like always like to switch the conversation to Hamas. Because it's so much more convenient than talking about what's going on in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, where you have a government that is literally then, you know, a security arm of Israel. Like, Israel controls all of it. You know, they collect the taxes of Palestinians in the West Bank. And when they don't want to pay it because they're mad about any, you know, they just keep it. They just keep it. And that's in the West Bank, and there's no Hamas there. But anyway, to the point of the Hamas' stated goals, like, I would repeat this a lot to my wife, and you know, and I said, you know, and they don't recognize Israel's right to exist, etc. And she was like, well, has Israel recognized Palestinians' right to exist? And literally, no one had ever. I'd never heard anybody ask that. And I had just assumed, like, of course we would. We're the good guys. And then I was like, I guess I should probably look this up. And I never saw a place where that was true. And so Israel's never has never recognized their right to exist. You know, it's like at some point I started to not be able to see a difference, at least in the last years, between Hamas and Israel. They're like in terms right. of leadership, because the atrocities that Hamas committed are things Israel does
all the time. Time
and has from the beginning. Right. Like, you know, we never learn about the Nakba the way that we learn about the creation of Israel. Like, I mean, I told you this in our DMs about Deir Yassin and the other villages and like the atrocities that were committed back then. But certainly these are things that happen regularly. You know, rapes, like mutilations, like in the street, like these things, Israel, it's just that you say this to other Jewish people and like they have like a, it's like they're malfunctioning, you know, like they're like glitching because they're like literally they'll sometimes, and I get this, but it, you know, it's like, but Jews would never do that. And that's like where they end up. And it's like, that's something in here that's not here. Like that's
right.
because we've always been the victims historically. We've never had our own country. We've always been the oppressed. We've always been the persecuted. And we know that, and we, you know, but now we have our own country and we're not better. You know what I mean? Like,
it's really easy for the oppressed to become the oppressor and then to feel justified by it. And it's human nature.
It's so sad. Like, it's really so sad because it is such a cycle of generational trauma. I mean, from a psychological explanation. Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, when you get especially men involved in wars, and if they have any kind of righteous indignation involved in it, like, you know, some of them are going to wind up, perpetrating unspeakable crimes against women, children, each other, on any side of anything. So it's not like, the Israelis are gentlemen in their, you know, warfare, and then the Hamas are the barbarians. Yeah.
But that's the message, you know, that right. is the message. Israel right. calls itself the most moral army in the world. What other army drops leaflets and gives citizens like a heads up that we're going to carpet bomb them, even though they have nowhere to go, you know? Like Hamas right. are the barbarians, right? They cut the heads off the baby. We didn't that didn't happen, but like they Israel's really been pushing this like hashtag Hamas is ISIS as a way to, you know, manufacture consent for like it to do anything it wants. But the generational trauma thing, like, and I mentioned to you this documentary Tantura about the massacres that were carried out in of Palestinian villages in 48. And you see, it's so sad because some of these guys, they're like Holocaust survivors. And in the, one of them is says like the ones that were the worst were the ones that like, in a way suffered the most or like learned this from the Nazis.
Well, and I mean, look at Roman Polanski. You know, he was he suffered a million things that were unspeakable, and then he became a rapist and a really amazing filmmaker, you know. But that's like it happens a lot. People who are rape victims become rapists, like we know that. So it really shouldn't
It's just really on a country right. on a national level, and you know, it's like it's definitely part of the story here. But also, like, there's also many people who survived the Holocaust and feel like this is are very much against this kind of, you know, response. Yeah. And people, or like went to Israel and decided like, I don't want to be a part of this, and went back to Europe. Like, there are many, many stories right. like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So one
so
question.
Is that, yeah.
I know. We try to make this into a comedy podcast, but sometimes it's not that funny to talk about whether babies were beheaded or not. So one thing that I have heard is like that Egypt is, because you hear about the open air, Gaza is an open air prison, but Egypt is blocking them on the other side. And so the kind of talking point I heard about that is like, so these people must be barbarians, or else why would the Egyptians also need to keep them out? Like, can you speak to that? Why is there a border on the other?
Egypt is another country, and it has, you know, an agreement with Israel, to like control that border. But in terms of like, right now, I Egypt at the very start of this. So like I saw an article at least like October 10th, was trying to send in trucks with humanitarian aid, and Israel threatened to bomb them and would not let them in. And which lines up with Israel's policy to starve the population and cut off food, electricity, fuel, and water.
Right.
And so it's not like Egypt wasn't immediately trying to send trucks with humanitarian aid. In terms of opening the border as a humanitarian corridor, you know, people will be like, well, why aren't you blaming Egypt? Which is a for sure talking point, because that's very like obvious way to just be like, but what's Egypt's role here? Like, clearly, why aren't we talking about why Israel is committing a genocide? Like, why is that, you know, not, why is your first response to say, well, why aren't you blaming Egypt? Like, well, they're not committing the genocide, but also most of the population in Gaza are refugees. They were kicked out of their houses in what became Israel. Certainly that was the case with my wife's family. Her mother's family was kicked out in 48 from Jaffa and went to Gaza. Her father was born in Gaza. And, you know, these people, you know, this Nakba that I talk about, their extermination, their eviction, this is going to be the end of Palestinian people. You know, if they've already been ethnically cleansed from their land once, if the idea of saying to like, oh, Israel is, you know, doing is such a moral army, it's basically saying to them, you can stay and die, or you can go to another country and become a refugee once more. There's no reason for these people to think that Israel is going to be like, come back in. When one of the major sticking points of the peace process is that Israel won't let the refugees return. It never compensated them. It barely acknowledges the history of what happened. So the other question is like, if Israel, because to tell civilian population your choices are to die or to go to another country as a refugee, that's called forcible deportation and is a crime against humanity. If Israel wasn't doing that, and it's made like it's all its leaders have been explicit in its genocidal intent and intent to ethnically cleanse these people. It's not like this is coming out of nowhere. They've said these things and they're doing it. If they wanted to make the point that that's not what they're doing and that they care about minimizing civilian casualties, they would open a corridor, a humanitarian corridor into Israel. They would set up camps in the Negev Desert. So why isn't Israel doing that?
Yeah, gotcha.
Why is it responsibility? Yeah.
Right. Okay. So one more talking point I've heard is when people have sent a lot of humanitarian aid to Gaza, but then Hamas uses the water pipes, they turn them into rocket launchers. So, I mean, if nothing else, it's just, again, Hamas is the problem, not the Palestinians. But can you speak to that at all? Do you know anything about that propaganda?
Hamas is a problem. I mean, Hamas is a problem. Yeah. It uses, it definitely has fuel, like, you know, that is not being used in hospitals because they're waging a war. Because, you know, they're, you know, at this point, like they're, yeah. I mean, if we're calling it a war and we're saying Israel can self-defense and so can Hamas, like, I, in every single conflict in the world, humanitarian aid and money is diverted on the ground to warring factions, to the people, to bad guys, away from it's when I used to be more involved in this area of life, like there was a term for it. There was a really good term for it. But basically, there's always a calculus when you're working at the UN, when you're involved in humanitarian affairs, that aid, everybody understands that there's like some portion that's going to go to the people that are fighting the war and sustain them. whether it's money, whether it's food, whether whatever it is, fuel, it's going to be used by the people fighting the war. But generally, the calculation is that that's just part of the cost of not starving a civilian population. And most people feel like that's a cost that you make.
Right. I mean, even if you just consider,
it's not Hamas, like it's literally any war in the world, like
anybody. And even in the US, our tax dollars go way more to fueling our wars than most of us would like them to. So, I mean, that's just men at the table.
They always find money somehow in the budget.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is a little bit of a kind of flippant wishful thinking, but it does feel like if we could just have a moratorium on male leadership and put some women in charge, that maybe people could figure out peace a little quicker than.
I mean, there's definitely some very bad women in history that have been in charge, but I am willing to roll the dice that percentage wise, I do think things would be better.
And just, I also, you know, like, mothers who are tired of losing. Yeah,
let's try. Why not?
Yeah. So, do you have? I mean, what is the best case scenario for, you know, in your mind for where we could go, you know, with figuring this out?
I mean, honestly, right now, I just I think there has to be a ceasefire, and there has to be something worked out with the hostages. In past Israeli governments that weren't this one, they would be a prisoner swap for the hostages.
Yeah.
There are thousands of political prisoners. There are hundreds of children in Israeli jails that are also held hostage, that are their children in jail without charge or trial. Exchange them.
Yeah.
Ceasefire, exchange the hostages, bring them back, give them prisoners. A lot of those people are there unfairly, and especially the kids. And then, you know, try to work something up. There has to be there can only be a political solution here. This is not, you know, this is not, this is, even if you get rid of Hamas, you're just radicalizing an entire, like, honestly, like if you were born into a situation like this, you were a kid who was in a hospital where you were getting stitched up without anesthetic, where there was nothing to wash you with, and also your entire family was dead in front of you in bags. Like, I mean, how do you not become a terrorist? Like, I can't imagine that I would ever not become a terrorist. I don't know. Like, I honestly, like, what would you do? I mean, it's very hard to imagine, but...
No, I mean, I get it. And I think so then, you know, some people just throw up their hands and you know, like Lindsey Graham's like, kill them all. You know, this is never going to end. But if we could get rid of Netanyahu, if we could.
Yeah, well, that's also, you know, I'm just saying, like, immediately ceasefire.
Right.
Hostages.
Ceasefire, hostage exchange. Then, right.
Yeah. Then, you know, there will be some accounting in an Israeli society for sure. Investigation into like what went wrong and all of this, and a major change in the leadership for sure. But there has to be pressure put. I don't think the U.S. is a party to this conflict and cannot be a mediator in this situation. So.
Right.
Europe, the other Arab states have to force a political solution here.
Yeah. So hopefully Europe and the other Middle Eastern states can try to get different leadership promoted in Israel who are actually interested in peace. I mean, again, it's just like if somebody over there would
have to pay for rebuilding
for it. Yeah, right. And so when we can say, you know what, instead of all of us spending all of our resources and human lives killing each other, we're actually going to come in and help you rebuild. And, you know, just like, again, this pie in the sky dream of like, hey, who wants peace? Could we try just breaking bread and eating hummus with each other and stop? Like, can we just stop? can we just do our best to stop all of the fighting and spend all of these resources building up your lives? I mean, it's the same thing where, like, with American, our reputation abroad, like, instead of killing people, could we go and spend resources, like, improving their lives so that they liked us? You know, yeah. Why does no one try just spending all the money on war, you know?
I mean, I will say there's a lot of money in weapons. It's a very big political lobby. And Gaza, sadly, has become kind of a laboratory on which to test weapons and surveillance, facial recognition, a lot of tech. Like guinea pigs, basically, is another.
Have
a great night.
Right, this is pretty devastating. Our only hope is that a tornado comes in, kills Netanyahu, and removes all of the bad leadership. Some women come to power on both sides and get together and say, hey, we're tired of our kids being killed. Why don't we build up our countries and learn to live in peace? I mean, is there any hope?
There is a group of women, Arab, Palestinian women and Israeli women who, I have to look into it more, but it's like one of the many pages and organizations I've seen kind of come through my feed. But there do exist these groups, and there is one I think in particular that is like women on, let's say, both sides or from both cultures that are working together in this interest. Yeah, I know. Well, it's very much like so many things. You're like, I feel like I saw that. Yeah.
I do think I saw that because I think I talk about this, like, let's let the women take over.
What about this group? Yeah.
I'll find that and link to it in the show notes, because maybe the best thing any of us could do would be to donate to that organization. It's already to be like an annoying sort of feminist position, but it really does feel like women are better at peace. We've been letting men run things for a long time on this planet, and they seem to be much more bloodthirsty. So, you know, we've let the men try for the last 70 something years. They've gotten it's only been worse and worse. So let's try something new.
70. It's been like all throughout history. Yeah.
Well, they're right. But I mean, this particular.
Here. You're right. Right. Well, there was gold in my ear. But yes. I agree with you. I would also say in terms of action, to go out and join a rally, and to call your reps and say ceasefire now.
Yeah, because I've seen also a lot of, Jewish organizations who are very, adamantly calling for ceasefires. Like, this is not like, the Jewish people want, no, I think most sane people want peace, you know, however upset they are about the destruction to either side. Most sane people would like peace, would like, an end to this cycle of violence. And, so let's just support that. You know, again, there's disgusting propaganda on both sides, and it's important not to see the disgusting propaganda and go, well, look at that side has disgusting propaganda, so they're the wrong ones. It's like, yeah, the other side's got disgusting propaganda too. So you can't use kind of the worst of, any side of things to decide, oh, they're the bad, they must be the bad guys because they're lying. Like, I just see so much of that online right now of like breaking down, well, look, Israel put out this little video and you can see where this was a lie and this person's tweet got deleted. And so, but then, so they must be the bad guys. And then on the other side, there's like, look at all of these Palestinians did. This was a lie and their hospital really didn't get bombed, And so they must be the bad guys.
It's like, no. The hospital was most likely a Hamas rocket, but it also takes much of the focus of like,
right.
All the other hospitals Israel's bombed. And
right. Now, let's not be them caught up. I saw this one account kept posting this thing about how this video that Israel put out about the Negev festival was actually something from a different music festival, and it was just people like leaving the gates. And I'm like, Okay, even if that wasn't the real festival, are you suggesting that killing didn't happen? Because right. if anything, any real footage of it would have been way more gruesome than what you see in this fake one where people are just trying to get out. Like, it just doesn't make sense. But all these people are like, yeah, everything that comes from Israel is a lie. Yeah, fuck them. Yeah, whatever. And I'm like, guys, you're losing the point. Like,
bullshit. Yeah, I think we're just as a basic thing, just I would not take as fact anything put out by Israel or Hamas that hasn't right. been otherwise verified. So even if it feels good because it like taps into something, some confirmation right. bias of wanting to show, you know, I would really try to like cross-reference every time I see right. even a picture of something. I'm like, who's the person that posted it? What do they do? And what are people saying? Has this picture, is it really from this? Like, you know, just don't like take time to double check things. Like right. you would can't even a restaurant review. Time you know?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like just, there's so much propaganda from everywhere that let's not listen to it. And let's also not decide that anyone who puts out something that comes out to be propaganda is the bad guys. Like there's not good guys and bad guys. There's a really fucked up situation that we've got to figure out how to find our way out of. And you know, and it's really hard to think of a way toward peace that is anything like what has been going on. You know, it does not seem like Netanyahu certainly doesn't want peace. It's like I say, like, the, you know, Netanyahu wants peace the way Fauci wants an end to disease. You know, that doesn't serve his interests. He wants to be in power and, like you said, not be in prison. So it's good for him when Hamas attacks, who apparently he funded, and then he can, you know, then people who are all of a sudden like, yeah, we do need a strong wartime president. Good, good, good. Like, mm-hmm. so, well, fuck Netanyahu. I think we can agree on that. Do you have any final
I think thoughts? Israelis agree, like literally the yeah. worst guy in, he's destroyed yeah. their country just to save his own ass. Like, right. It's crazy. It, like I to, like beyond I that's my number one person right. right now. If I had to say you gotta go.
Yeah. Yeah, worse than Trump.
Podcast?
Yeah, I think I think, but it's probably not even a controversial opinion. I think most people would agree.
Mean, like, you get to pick one guy who's gotta go.
Oh yeah, let's do that every episode. If you get to assassinate one person on the planet, who would yours be? That's maybe that'll be our ending segment. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Any final thoughts about Israel Palestine before we move on to our bonus segment?
I guess I would just say that in the fog of war, to be very careful about sources. I would definitely, and because I don't see a lot of things on the Arab side just with my feed, but I would really caution against a lot of these kind of anti-Semitism accounts that are also incentivized to put out that weaponize anti-Semitism in the service of Zionism. They get a lot of funding. I don't believe the ADL can be trusted on this, and like the Jew belong and Jew hate, all of these, I just don't like, just don't count on them as your source for what's happening. Is one thing I'd say. And if you don't, and try to expand your circle of information and people that you know and listen to, and in particular Palestinians, because they have really, it's only quite recently that they have, that any of their voices have even been a little bit heard.
Yeah. And so it's as important as it is to, you know, as worrisome as it is that anti-Semitism does seem to be growing, you know, that you see the people in Australia going, gas the Jews, and it's really like a terrifying situation. But you also can't then, like you said, weaponize anti-Semitism to excuse the genocide.
Can I just say something about that? protest.
Yeah.
When I looked it up, when it was you know, written about in the Australian papers, their video from that was from an Australian of these like anti-Semitism organizations. And the newspaper said this video cannot be verified. Like, we have not verified this video. So I just not saying that that, no, I'm not saying it didn't happen. But what I'm saying was that they do, it's very Fox News in that it could have been, in general, a very, this could have been one element in a sea of peaceful, you know, ceasefire, whatever signs. And this is what they cut the video. It's, I don't know if you know, if you remember the Black Lives Matter protests and the kind of footage that you would see on, like, could see on Fox News that made it look like it was just a riot and looting spree with like fires being lit everywhere. And you'd be like, but I was at that. And that's definitely not what the vibe was, you know? And so I just to say that, like, and also, like, a lot of the protests, like, and they had to walk this back on the BBC. I don't know if you saw this clip where they're like, well, we did say it was a pro-Hamas protest, and that was a mischaracterization, you know? Like, already the message is out. It's, you know, so the Australian, like, the heads of that rally tried to get the police to help them get rid of that group, and like,
that's comforting.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely, like you said, with the Black Lives Matter and all those protests, you know, if you watch one news station, it's mostly peaceful and they're ignoring the destruction that there was. And then if you watch Fox, you're seeing mostly violent and ignoring the peaceful. Like, there's always, the truth is somewhere in the middle. I mean, I've definitely, you know, heard people saying things at the New York rally, like, very quickly after the attacks that were, you know, pretty disgusting. I mean, I don't remember exactly what they said, but I know there has been some really disgusting, you know, anti-Semitic sentiments that have been shared. But again, it's like, you can't look at the worst of anything and decide that that means the worst about that entire field of thought. Just like, if you looked at the craziest people on the left and decide, well, fuck every liberal, you know, here, and if you look at the craziest people on the right and say, fuck every conservative, you know, that's just like, it's, that shit gets weaponized, especially on social media. It's so easy to get us to decide we hate an entire group of people, or that an entire group of people is dehumanized to us because we see the worst representations of them, and even the worst representations of them somewhat being cheered for, because, you know, that's also somewhat of a group mentality that does happen with humans. And there can be people who walk away from that going, wait, what did I just cheer for? But in the moment, they got swept up in something that is unfortunately below their morals. Great. Well, I think we did a pretty good job of trying to look at this in a way that's so just a little more human. I just, all I want is people to look at things in a more human way. So you want to do our bonus segment to lighten the mood a little bit?
Go ahead.
Yeah. No. You said you had a controversial opinion about people who identify as queer. What was that?
Oh, well, you know, because I had this joke, and I want to say controversial because it sometimes really didn't go over well. But it's a joke that's part of a longer bit about when I got a hysterectomy because of cervical cancer. On the day of the insurrection. And the joke is, and I was really lucky, they caught it early. But like, I went under and woke up and I could hear the nurses whispering about an insurrection. And you know, I was like, who would have thought that my uterus was the only thing holding this country together? And then I was thinking a lot about, you know, that I decided not to like call myself a cancer survivor, because I feel like, it's not really my word, like, not that anyone's gatekeeping cancer survival, but I just felt like, you know, to me, I worried that, you know, someone would be like, no chemo, no radiation, like keep it moving, dolly, right. doll, you know, if I made like a really right. big deal, you know, and it right. made me think of like, you know, it's like, I don't want to like gatekeep, but I will. I think, you know, it's sort of like a woman who's exclusively dated men, but one time kissed a woman once in college and is like the loudest about being queer.
Thanks for making it to the end of the episode. Things got really juicy from here. If you want to watch it, go to politicallynb.substack.com, where you can find all kinds of bonus material. All right. Well, thanks, Jess. This has been fun. I got to go get some dinner, but yeah, I think we solved the world's problems. Yeah.
I think so. thanks for having me. All right.
Me. Yeah. Thanks. Do you want to plug anything before you go?
Follow me on Instagram at Jess_Solomon, SALOMON. I post comedy, but lately I've been, posting about the Middle East. It's I'm very, very trustworthy. And what else can I say? I have an album and comedy special called Sad Witch that is going to be coming out. I don't have a date yet, but with 800 Pound Gorilla. But if you follow me, you'll find out.
Sweet. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Thanks, Jess.